I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest star
two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and we're still doing John's picks. And here today is Sierra Ryan, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Sierra. How you doing?
I'm good.
This one is going to seem a little off at first, but then when you understand, well, you know why I picked you to do this movie, but you, the listener, when you understand why, you'll be like, it makes sense. We're gonna go on a whole journey this episode, though, so buckle up, kids, because we're here to talk about The Boys from Syracuse, the 1940 film version of the 1938 stage musical. The screenplay is by Charles Grayson, Paul Gerard Smith, and Leonard Spielgas. Yes. Music by Richard Rodgers, lyrics by Lorenz Hart, and it was directed by A. Howard Sutherland. And according to IMDb, from user, there was no real plot summary. So from user Alessandro Martini, and it's going to take me a minute. This is a long ass summary, everyone.
Thank you, Alessandro.
Thank you, Alessandro. The action takes place in Uffizi's. I said that wrong, didn't I? I knew I was going to say it wrong. How do you?
I mean, Ephesus.
Ephesus. I put the wrong emphasis.
Ephesus. I like Ephesus. It must smell like that in some other version of it.
The action takes place in Ephesus in ancient Asia Minor, and the story concerns the efforts of two boys from Syracuse, Antipholus and his servant Dromio, to find their long lost. Wait, hold on. Did I write that wrong? I hope I did. Yes, I can. To find their long lost twins who, for reason of plot confusion, are also named Antipholus and Dromio. Complications arise when the wives of Ephesians, Adriana and her servant Luce, mistake the two young strangers for their husbands, though the couples eventually get sorted out after Adriana's sister Phyllis and the Syracusian Antipholus admit their love.
True-ish. Although they're coming to Ephesus to look for their father.
Yes.
Not their twins. Well, they don't realize that they have twins.
So Antipholus is coming to Ephesus to find his father.
Yes.
The Syracusian Antipholus is coming to find his father. The Ephesian, right? Ephesian?
Ephesusians? I don't know.
Ephesusian? Ephesusian Antipholus doesn't know that he's a twin.
No.
Yeah. This is based off of Shakespeare, too.
Shakespeare,
very loosely based off of Comedy of Errors.
Yes.
Yes. As they like to say at the end, too.
Yeah.
So I'm taking the pin out right up top. Why I picked this is because the internet tells me that Bess Flowers is in this movie as a character.
Now, who is she? Which one is she?
Okay.
I couldn't recognize her. I don't know.
So here's where things get very, very tricky and weird.
Uh-huh.
Multiple sources. Now it's IMDb, Wikipedia, and there's a few other websites that told me this, that Bess Flowers plays woman. I believe she's the woman who asks for the autograph of the Syracusian Antipholus.
Yeah.
Thinking it's the other one.
Yeah.
However,
yes.
In the end credits of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Her name does not appear.
Well, I mean, but they didn't really do that for every single person. That was not done back then.
There were like at the very end credits, you know, they have, you know, the main actors and then the rest of the players who all had like a line.
Sort of.
And there were two women credited as women, the character name.
Mm-hmm.
One of them who is also like online on IMDb and Wikipedia and everything.
Right.
Her name is Doris Lloyd. I believe she's the woman in the tailor shop that sits in the dust and everything, and they measure her.
Gotcha.
I think that's her.
Yeah, for her ass.
The other woman character that is credited is Elaine Brandis.
Okay.
Who doesn't exist.
So, because I noted the woman getting her his signature because she was very kind of that, like, she reminded me of the Singing in the Rain character, the very Dora Bailey gossip columnist, you yes. know, kind of type. So that kind of would fit her. I just don't know her visually to be like, oh, that's her, especially as young as she was.
I looked at pictures. I did my own cross-referencing, you know. I wish I had, like, a giant Minority Report style finger waving computer to figure everything out.
I think
that's her.
Okay.
But
she did a good job. I liked her little character moment. I like,
but the movie and the internet are telling me two different things. All so right. I'm not 100% sure. So
if you know, ladies and gentlemen out there,
if somebody can find definitive proof, that's the reason why I picked Sierra. And I picked another movie at first, but Sierra was like, this ain't a musical, bro. And I went, got it.
No. Yeah.
So
also, I will say that I have done this musical twice on stage. I did for Reprise in Los Angeles in 1999. I was just still at UCLA, so they were using the Froude Playhouse stage and then casting us as a little literally chorus babies.
Yes, which you sent me the review for.
Yes,
that
it did, and it's so cute. It's so
I'm
cute.
Not the sure room, how the person feels about the show itself.
I know. Well, that's to be.
But they seem to like your production of it.
Yeah. It's very much, you know, basically a very giant stage reading of it, because we weren't supposed to be off book, but we kind of rolled our scripts up and, you know, it didn't really matter. We were off book. It was fine.
It's like the New York City Center's encores.
Yeah,
but
it's encores,
on
but
the
it was
West
for
Coast.
In Los Angeles. Yeah. And then I understudied the role of Luce in A Comedy of Errors for Utah Shakespearean Festival. So I sort of know the story generally from different sides, and then so watching this movie, it was kind of a revelatory, because I had never heard that there was a movie musical version of this in all of my decades of looking through, you know, Blockbuster Video for all these different movie musicals. I had never heard of it,
so this
was a revelation.
This movie, for a second, I thought that Alan Jones and Joe Penner may have been like a comedy duo, but it seems like they're not.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't.
Because I, for a while there, I was getting a little scared stiff vibes, where I was like, "Did I fuck up? I think I fucked up." But like, this one is a musical for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are music. One of the songs I know, and I told you this prior, but I realized how I know this song. So this is where Falling in Love with Love is from, that was later used in the 1997 Cinderella starring Brandy, where Bernadette Peters sings this song.
Gotcha.
So, you know, seeing that title, I'm like, this has gotta be. I hear it in my head, and I'm like, I hear Bernie singing it, but like, was it from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist?
Yeah, was it?
Did
was
I
it
see
some
her
other...
in something else doing it?
Yeah.
Did my own brain create an AI version of it with Bernadette Peters? No, I didn't.
No,
I was right.
Okay.
It was from Cinderella, because they used, I mean, it's Richard Rodgers, so they used other of his music.
Falling in Love with Love was in my audition book in Los Angeles for many years as my soprano golden age song. So I definitely knew it for many, many years afterwards. It's not my casting. I'm very much more a Luce, but now, you know, whatever. So, but it was great. And even my acting coach that I was actually with today, James Beeman, he watches everything. He watches TCM and AMC, and he has DVDs of old movies. He had never
something?
Heard of this. And so he wrote it down and I sent him a link. And, you know, he was like, oh,
this is good, because a good thing about this podcast that I'm finding however many episodes in is that, like, there are some musicals or some movies, really, we'll go even
recorded,
broader.
Yeah, recorded content.
Yeah, that nobody knows about. So at least it brings it to the eye, to the forefront.
Yeah, totally.
And so you're using word of mouth. We're using word of mouth right now to maybe, like, drum up some little interest. Because, like, the movie I thought was hilarious.
Me too. And it's not perfect, but holy Moses. I think it was, it didn't really get very good reviews or good reactions, but in my opinion, it was ahead of its time, because
yes,
the anachronisms that kind of got bad press in some of the reviews was so Mel Brooks.
There was so many History
of the World Part 1.
I literally wrote that down too. I was like, did he get inspired by this movie?
Honestly, if Mel Brooks had been like, yeah, I saw this Boys from Syracuse and that inspired my History of the World Part 1.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Or he watched it and then forgot it as a young kid and then had his own, you know, revelation of,
like,
it was
in the subconscious.
Subconscious,
of, like...
yeah. I mean, that opening scene of, first of all, this is like 1940, you know, obviously, you know, filmed that year or at least the year before. The gigantic, beautiful, white, you know, quote unquote, marble sets of this, you know, Greek Romanesque city has this sort of gigantic Busby Berkeley,
yes,
Depression era 1930s glamour to it that is so gorgeous to look at and
very opulent.
You know, I mean, they're having horses and chariots going around.
Chariots?
Chariots. Chariots. chariots on set. And
there was also
beautiful.
That, like, line of maybe 10 women playing the harp.
Playing the harp, yeah. In the garden.
Like, getting 10 harps in a row.
And that beautiful, in the garden, they dance with this beautiful pond, like still pond, that's like a mirror, basically, so it reflects their own dancing. It's just there's some this beautiful opulence that maybe because of the war they had to kind of cut down on
now,
you
like,
know, a little bit.
Now, like, watching it, I was like, okay, so the dresses that the women wear are modern day dresses that they, like, add a trim,
yeah,
or did
a little
fun
Romanesque
sleeve with, you know, it. I was like, okay, I'm forgiving this, that, like, because movies of this time, the 40s and of that era, are, yeah, not as, there wasn't as high of an expectation to be period as it is today.
Right, but they did a pretty good job in, like, kind of taking a more of a theater costume,
yes,
to the film. And then adding layers of, I mean, when they hire a taxi and this chariot that has checkers on it,
and
then
the flag,
and he has the meter, and that's my husband was laughing his ass off next to him. And getting ice cream the hotel says Wooden Horse Inn, which just is, you know, it's just like
Trojan
horse, obviously. And they just had so many wonderful moments, especially in the beginning. I think they kind of lost that kind of thread later on, but just,
yeah,
that moment
where with Dromio and the, which Dromio was it? I think it was the Ephesian.
Uh-huh.
Count how many times I mess this word up, everyone.
It'll be a drinking game.
The Ephesian Dromio bouncing around the square, like, that was hilarious. But,
yeah,
like, I understand what you're saying. It did dip a little.
They gave up on that shtick. Yeah,
but there were still funny moments throughout. Like,
oh, yeah,
the running gag of the what is he, a lord?
The Duke.
The Duke, thank
yes,
you.
The Duke, the trumpets.
With the, yeah, trumpets that started out very royal, but then went very jazz.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and yeah. Him rolling his eyes the whole time at that. And then, like, once we introduced the twin aspect, we played a little bit with that kind of humor.
Although,
I really appreciated that they did very subtle changes with their costumes.
Mm.
So, like, the Dromios had different borders on their hems.
Yeah.
But they were still wearing, like, the same basic thing that they then were like, okay, we're going to swap this hem, this detail out and put this one in.
I will say one of the joys of watching the stage version is that all the leads are played by different actors. So you bend to the you bend to the theatrical acceptance of the fact that they are twins, even though they are not twins. They might be types, the same type, but costume will work towards making them twins by putting them in the same outfit. But when your twin characters are played by the same actor, they have to make different choices and wear slightly different costumes in order to make the audience track who's who. And I think they did a pretty good job on letting us know and tracking, and a little bit of split screen technology, which was actually brilliantly done.
That split screen was very well done. It made me think of, what was the Gene Kelly movie we did? Where he split screened. Was that it?
Cover Girl, where he dances with his mirrored self.
Yes. Yeah. The mirror dance. The mirror dance, of course.
In the window dance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It made me think of that, because obviously you're back and we're doing split. But, like, I couldn't find the seam.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That is very well done. Also, this movie's in black and white. So, like, and this was of the time. We're almost, well, Wizard of Oz was before this, but, like, we're almost
years.
At color being the prominent.
The majority. Yeah. Yeah.
So they couldn't be like, okay, well, Syracuse and Tiflis is going to wear, I said his name wrong too, is going to wear purple, but then the Ephesian one is going to wear pink. You know, we couldn't tell that because it's black and white. So they had to.
Yeah.
Play a little more with, like, the details of things.
Right. And certainly the duo, I guess, from Ephesus, you know, which are the ones that are that's their home, are kind of the quote unquote the asshole and the clown. They're the ones that are, because Antipholus doesn't pay his bills. He's kind of like Trump, not to use that word, but he's just this kind of, you know, he just goes drinking, whatever. I'm going to go drinking. I'm not going to care if my wife at home, you know, is calling for me. I'm kind of abusive to my slave.
And I'm going to rack up bills.
I'm
going to
rack up bills
them.
And not pay them. And then Dromio is just kind of like, well, I'm getting browbeat by my wife at home, but I'm gonna, you know, kind of flirt with other women, and kind of he kind of stepped into Jerry Lewis.
Yes.
Jerry Lewis, and I was
territory.
Like,
that's the other scared stiff moment.
Yeah.
Where I was like oh. But no. Like, he made it he made it work, because he looks goofy, and he is goofy, and he's playing the goofball.
Yeah,
so.
But then the Syracusian duo are the romantic lead, and the more kind of grounded, you know, Dromio, they're more grounded and more our heroes, because the other two have kind of set themselves up as kind of the antagonists of everything else. They kind of mess things up, even though, you know.
Well, now, here's the thing. The Antipholus is
Antipholi.
Those twins, their father is there. We see a family member.
Right.
But the Dromio twins are not related. They are their servants.
No, their parents are was sold away some other time. You know, they're slaves. What can you do? Servant people and slaves and all that stuff.
There was a moment. So at the dinner moment,
mm-hmm.
like prior to that, which one was it? The Ephesian Dromio and the Syracusian Antiphilus met, and they were talking, and they were doing like that who's on first kind of
right,
a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, where's the money? What money? I gave you money earlier. No, I don't
know
this money.
No, that, yeah.
But then once we get to the dinner at the what's her name?
For
Adriana,
yeah, and Phyllis,
with the Syracusian duo.
Yeah.
When did they like get together? I think I blinked and I missed it.
You mean like after they sang "Falling in Love with Love"? That whole thing?
Well, no. So like my thought was that once the Syracusian Antiphilus and the Ephesian Dromio did the who's on first moment, I thought they stuck together
for the most part for the rest of the yeah.
Right,
there was not a lot of crossover.
But then when the Ephesian Antiphilus comes knocking on the door, he's
right.
with his Dromio.
Yeah,
so I was just
they're
like,
both they're both enraged that they're not being let in. Yeah,
right, so I was like, when did we switch back? I missed it. I missed
okay,
something.
Maybe I don't remember. I think one just left and the other came in. That walked in.
This is where like the comedy of this is like a little. I needed like something. I needed a bigger moment or something to know like who's who.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's gonna happen. I think there's a certain amount of like the movie definitely simplifies things because the stage version is a lot more complicated. There's a whole courtesan thing where Antiphilus of Ephesus is has been seeing a courtesan on the side, and that's not he's not drinking a lot. He's a lot. And the courtesan, but he's not paying the courtesan either. And the courtesan is like, damn it, I have to go and get this money. So, you know, so that there's both the tailor and I think the tailors and the courtesan in the stage version. They don't mention the courtesan in the film because mm-hmm. 1940.
Well, they do touch upon the fact that Luce may have cheated on her husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, which one of you was with me last night? And then the not her husband
oh,
raises
yeah.
his hand and she's like,
ooh,
oh,
hi. Hey.
Oh,
there's
well,
almost
then.
A threesome by the end. There's almost this idea that
I was hoping
I hope,
for that as well.
I hope. I think they were like, well, all right, maybe.
Well, so this yeah. movie only has six of the songs from the show.
I don't think it even has six of the songs. I think it has four of the songs.
No, it has. It definitely has six. But
I'm
they
trying
are
to figure out where the other ones work. So I was looking at the original.
So the Greeks had no word. Oh, wait. Oh, are you saying that like some songs were written for
were
the
written
movie?
Written for the movie, not for the stage show.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, so there's only six songs in the movie.
Right.
In other words.
The ones that were from the play that made it into the movie was Sing for Your Supper, This Can't Be Love, Falling in Love with Love, and the He and She one.
Yeah.
Everything else, like Who Are You or something, or the Greeks Have No Word for It, I don't think those are.
Yeah, I think those were written for the movie.
Yeah.
There's not really a lot on the interwebs about this, so that's why
no.
I was like, well, did I mess up and say that Best Flowers is in this, even though everything is telling
yeah,
me
no,
that she is?
No. No, it's a musical. They definitely break out into song.
It is a musical. They break out into song. I feel like, though, they cut parts of, like, Sing for Your Supper or
maybe they definitely put it in a different setting because originally Sing for Your Supper is a female trio of three ladies singing it in tight harmony, and I missed that. Now it's just Luce and Dromio
where
and Syracuse.
It was just shoehorned in by a bird telling them to sing
and
for
a
your
parrot
supper.
Exactly. And I was like, what? Okay, this is
all right,
thing.
Enchilada man.
Yeah, I know. And also what I I did not understand, and it's probably because what's his name? Alan Jones is a beautiful singer. He's got a great voice. Who plays all the Antiphali? He probably is the better of all the singers in the cast, so they gave him Falling in Love with Love, which doesn't really make
Okay.
sense for his character as a rom, because it's not a romantic song, even though it's written as with this beautiful soaring melody that is just absolutely gorgeous. But it's basically like it's originally sung by
Phyllis?
Adriana,
Oh,
no,
Adriana.
Adriana, as a way of saying, I married for this guy who now drinks and goes whoring, basically. And but don't fall. She's singing to her sister, I think. Don't fall in love with love. Like, just get that out of your system. Marry for money or someone who's a regular Joe who just sits at home and, blah blah blah. If love fell out with me, that's not a romantic song to sing to someone.
No. I feel.
It's just a very weird. But he sings it beautifully, but not with any sort of plot-driven emphasis.
I feel like cutting a lot of the songs out was a hindrance of this.
Yeah.
Or putting them in different spots.
Yeah, I think they were trying to mix things up when they shouldn't have, when they didn't really need to,
No, because
or
like.
recast it,
I mean, I see that I'm assuming Luciana is the courtesan character.
Luciana. Well, there's Luce, who's the girl servant slash cook is what in Comedy of Errors, she's the cook. She's the Martha Raye character.
There's Luce and Luciana. There's in the
In
stage
the
version.
original, okay, so maybe Luciana is the courtesan.
Oh, sorry. No, Adriana's sister's name is Luciana. That's it.
Oh, and in this one, it's Phyllis.
Phyllis.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, Phyllis doesn't sound that Greek.
Yeah, I don't
I'm
know. Yeah,
just gonna throw
Phyllis.
that out there.
Well, you never know.
Well, I was just looking at like some of the songs, and I was like, I mean, they could have added more in.
Well, it's also interesting because in very much the Shakespearean and very musical theater way, in the original, both Comedy of Errors and the original Boys from Syracuse, they don't figure out the whole twins situation until like 10 minutes before a curtain, before the end of the second act. In this, there was like half an hour of the Antipholus of Ephesus, or no, Antipholus of Syracuse realizing, oh, this is my brother's wife. This is my brother's sister-in-law.
Yeah, where he's like, how does everyone know
Oh.
me?
And then Phyllis also figures it out. So there's less of a random wrapping up at the end because musicals and comedy. Then there's like I paused it. I was like, wait, they figured that out
But
really quick.
I
And
think
then
it
it becomes more
also,
about saving the father and dealing
yes.
with the politics and the law and the Duke and stuff like that than the romantic entanglement, that
I
kind of
think
thing.
also introducing the twin aspect very late into the movie,
Yeah,
it felt very late for
yeah, but
me.
I loved their reveal of being brought in to the city dressed like
That was
statues. Like,
hilarious.
that was, I'm like, that's the way to
But
do it.
I mean, like
That's hilarious.
they should have introduced the father, the Syracusian father, earlier than when they
Maybe.
did, because he
I
because
guess they
we're
wanted to establish what
I guess
the
because they
duo.
there's that whole the whole montage we talked about where they introduce like modern things to
Right.
Grecian times, which is
Right.
hilarious all in and of itself. But I was like, this is a little too long. This is a little
You could
what's
have
happening
interspersed
here?
it a little bit further,
Yes.
but who are we?
That's what I, but that's one of the complaints. It's not, I didn't really flat it. I just have a complaint about it, is that some of the jokes went on a little too long.
Yeah,
Like
but that, I mean,
when they
yeah.
jump out of the chariots. or Cariots, excuse me, as you said it earlier.
Cariots. I'm never gonna live that down. Yeah, I mean they're like, oh, and it's the same
and everyone's
pothole,
rolling down
and everyone's
the same
rolling
hill.
Down this list. Yeah, I will say it was hilarious to go from this beautiful set, you know, at Universal, the lot, to Griffith Park, where all the outside stuff was probably filmed. It's like, oh, there's the California Mountain or the Los Angeles Mountains. Okay, great.
I thought it was. I thought they were also inspired by Ben Hur, because Ben Hur,
oh,
there is a 1928
definitely.
Ben Hur
oh,
that
yeah.
had the chariot race.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and I'm so sure many of the stuntmen were probably hired to get back on the chariots for those. Those are some great stunts, because those are real. Everything was real.
Everything's real. Everything's
yeah,
real.
Everything's real. I did like also that there was a so there was that moment where the Duke says, "Take me to the treasury," and he gets on a chariot, and then
it just goes
across the street to the treasury. And my husband sitting here says, "Well, that's Los Angeles for you." And the next moment, there was a shot of a sign that says "Los Angeles City Limits." Literally, it says "Los Angeles City Limits" right above, across from the treasury, or like right near the treasury entrance. And I'm like, that is hilarious. So this movie is very on point. It knew what it was making fun of, in addition to doing the whole comedy of errors thing. I will also notice that my husband started laughing when Antipholus of Ephesus went into the bar or the casino or whatever it is and ordered a drink, and the bartender was Irish. Did you clock that? Yeah. And
no,
I didn't. And then Pete's like, "The bartender's Irish." I'm like, "Oh, that's amazing." So there was little moments here and there. I liked all the signs. Signage was hilarious.
Is the show kind of like this? The stage version?
I don't remember it quite being as referential of modern things. I think it was mainly the comedy and the comedy of errors, you know, shenanigans mixed with the somewhat anachronistic, you know, modern day musical theater tropes of the day. But I don't remember them. I think stylistically it was all very modern, but I don't remember. And people, please email in if you remember, like, oh no, in this moment she was, you know, calling someone on the phone, but it was really a pigeon and whatever. You know, I don't remember exactly all the details. So, but it could be.
Yeah. So the stage version, since we're kind of here,
yeah.
Opened in 1938, on Broadway, after having tryouts in Connecticut and Boston. There's a lot. The Wikipedia page shows all the production history of it, so I don't really want to get that much into it. But like, there was a 2002 revival of this that ran for 73 performances and 29 previews, with a new book by Nikki Silver,
gotcha.
Who it seemed like this person updated,
massaged things. Yeah,
yeah,
maybe, who knows? And I don't remember how much misogyny and. You know, was mixed in as well. I don't remember any things. I will also say I took a screen cap, or not a screen cap, but a picture of my TV where they were going, I think, into the law area, like the legal area or legal building. And it said, "Stray dogs, agents, Syracusians will be executed on site." And I was like, agents. That's hilarious. That is so funny. Like, I'm gonna make this my Facebook cover one of these days.
George Balanchine, just to throw a name out there, choreographed the original production.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Which I feel like that's also what was severely missing in this. There were some dance, but there wasn't a lot.
Yeah. No, I mean the lovely ladies with their, you know, lyres. Mm-hmm. And you know, dancing in the garden, that was okay. That was fine.
But
it was pretty.
I mean, I could always use more. This movie's only an hour and 14 minutes.
Yeah. And the last half hour is all that, you know,
and the link I found online, which I sent to you, I think, mm-hmm. did you watch the same one?
Yeah.
It was very interesting because there's the trailer for it before the movie starts, and I was like, oh, it's very interesting to see how they did trailers
Oh
in the
yeah.
40s.
Yeah, I love them. I love those. Yeah, it's like the gayest musical extravaganza. It's like, oh, okay.
You're like, I've seen
I've
gayer.
seen gayer. There's going to be more gay to come.
But like even in there, they're like the selling point is like six songs in this movie. You're like,
Woo!
okay, I feel like
Woohoo!
there could be more.
Yeah, they could have, but you know, depending on the budget, I mean, they definitely had a budget, but I don't know, maybe they just churned them out constantly. I will say also, if you look at the guard that of the father who gets sewn onto the sewn together to the jail door, apparently his name is Cyril Ring. And if you look at his
Cyril Ring?
Cyril, C-R, Cyril Ring as
Cyril,
in,
yeah.
yeah, as in wedding ring, he did like 20 movies in 1940 alone, it feels like.
Oh,
If you go
yeah.
on his thing, he was doing silent films for like since time immemorial, since the beginning of films. So some of the stuff was just, let's just bang it out as quickly as possible and get it done. So,
Well,
you know.
our queen of the Hollywood extras,
Yes,
Bess
as
Flowers,
exactly.
you just are
Yeah.
scrolling for days through
Days
her
and days and days.
IMDb.
Cyril Ring is the same thing. Can we talk a little bit about some of the actors in this? Because
Of course.
I feel like at first glance, the only character, the only actor that I recognized name-wise was Eric Blore, because we've seen him before in Astaire and Rogers movies before. He was
Yes.
in which one did we do most
Top
recently?
Hat.
Top Hat. He was in Top Hat
He was
as
in
the
Top
servant. He
Hat.
was,
That's how I
yep,
know him.
he was it Mr.
He
Rogers?
was Bates,
Bates,
Hardwick's
yes.
valet.
Yeah, so yeah, so that,
Oh, he was the gay valet. Oh,
yeah,
he
he
was
was the
the.
gay valet.
Yes, now it's making
Yes,
sense.
yeah. Susquehanna is how I just always remember him. But yeah, he was one of the tailors. And they're, you know, they're there just to react and have some funny moments. But then I kind of started getting deeper. I didn't really know the leads at all very much. Charles Butterworth,
No.
I have seen. He played the Duke. And while he didn't actually do the voice, he is a char he was a character actor, and the voice of Captain Crunch was inspired by him. So there must be some other movies that he was in where he played, you know, a sort of character actor voice that Captain Crunch was inspired by.
On his
Whatever.
Wikipedia, they only
Yeah.
have a partial filmography.
Partial filmography.
Because
Okay.
I have a feeling, like you said, the in this time of history for Hollywood,
Yeah.
they were just cranking them out. I think you only
Cranking.
got what, like one take, maybe two, if
Yeah,
you really
yeah.
fucked up.
Yeah.
And even then, like, because they were filming it. It was on film, which cost money. So
You
you
can't
won't.
improvise very much into it. I
No.
also, when I mentioned Martha Raye, my husband recognized her from lots and lots of television that he recognized. Like, oh, that's that character actress. And she played Luce. She's a beautiful woman, but she has a big kind of comedic, very Fanny
I
Brice type of
loved
humor.
her.
Yeah. I think she was underused in a certain sense, but you know, she did what she could. You know, what
Do
are you
you
looking at?
know who she played later?
I probably what? Don't leave me hanging.
She was one of the replacements of Bertha in Pippin, the grandmother.
Ah, nice.
She's
Yeah.
the one that's in the recording,
Nice.
the
Okay.
film
And she,
recording of
I
it.
definitely, I would have, she had a bunch of theater roles later on, and I would have loved to have seen her Miss Hannigan. I would have loved to have seen her Dolly Levi. I think she also did Annie Get Your Gun. So she was playing those wonderful broads of musical on stage that I would have loved to have seen that. So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
I'm trying to see who she was in Annie Get Your Gun. It's not, I don't see anything.
I think she was Annie. I think she was.
She was like one of the replacements.
I don't remember. I don't remember. It was just listed as like theater credits include.
Yes, that's what I'm seeing, and they don't say who she played. God damn it.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of research that you know. Yeah, anyway, I just felt like there was
and
some good casting
and
on that.
Alan Jones, our Antiphilus, mm-hmm. are the ones that basically sing in this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, everyone else does at points, but like, they're
Rosemary
the one.
Rosemary does the This Can't Be Love. She's okay, you know. She's kind of one note.
Well, Phyllis,
yeah.
But like, Martha Ray got the Greeks had no word for it.
Right.
Sing for Your Supper, and he and she.
Yeah.
Even though he and she was a duet, and Alan Jones sang "Who Are You" and "Falling in Love."
Right.
And it's interesting because I'm like, are you two the singers? Is that what's going on?
It seems like it. It seems like that was the. I mean, I liked Alan Jones. I think he shorted out the microphone a little bit with his because he's one of those singers who just belts it out, like just absolutely belts it out, and you can hear kind of the mic not being able to hold on to it. Like he was peaking a little bit, like if you can think about it, either that or just it was a bad, you know, recording. But also on the link that you sent me, there was a radio thing, a radio
I didn't listen to that at the end.
Listen to the advertisement, because he re-performs that, but you can tell that he was singing it very tender, more tenderly than he did for the movie, and you can kind of have a sense of he did have colors to his approach. He just didn't do it in the movie. He just kind of like busted it out.
Because again, you get one take.
Yeah, you get one take and you do it. But yeah, I his voice is beautiful and he's good to look at. So all right, I like that he did do some acting choices in terms of playing the asshole and then also the hero. I think
it
worked.
And Joe Penner, our Dromio, he was more of a radio personality, I believe. That's what I'm reading.
He didn't do very much after this, which is, I mean, I wasn't like so much of a fan of his, because I don't know, I felt like all his choices were just kind of like, okay, all right, you know.
Yeah, like that moment we were talking about where he's walking through the square. He's just some dude at that point. Just
hey,
like,
lady.
Oh, you want me? You're using me as a device to introduce this world? Okay.
I liked his Syracusian Dromio better because he was more.
Oh. You know,
he was a little more street tough. I liked it. I liked it. Also, I was staring at one of the very first lines is Octavius, who is the announcer who announces, all right, this hero, the hero of the war, blah, blah, blah. Give it up for, you know, Antiphilus. And then he puts a cigar in his mouth.
Oh, that
was staring
also a
at
moment
him.
That
I was,
lost my mind laughing my ass off. Sorry, I was just,
because
it was just so funny that he's just there with a cigar.
And I was staring at him. I'm like, how do I know him? And he was in the Gene Kelly movie musical Take Me Out to the Ball Game as one of the, I think he was the coach or one of the other ball players, as well as one of the, I think he was one of the actors in the To Be or Not to Be with Radio Guy. Not the Mel Brooks version, which is also incredibly good, but the...
I don't know.
It's the Jack Benny program. The Jack Benny program. Okay. So Jack Benny did a movie version called To Be or Not to Be, which is set in World War II. And Tom Duggan has a beautiful moment where he pretends to be Adolf Hitler to distract people, because it's about these actors kind of infiltrating the Nazis. And it's a beautiful movie. And Mel Brooks redid it, but both of them are, you should do a To Be or Not to Be double feature and just watch the two of them.
Ooh,
back to back. It's
okay.
A really good,
well,
not musicals, but
kind of, well, for personal, I understand.
Yeah.
It's also kind of interesting in this, speaking of Hitler in a way, like their little salute to each other was to put their arm out to their side.
Yeah, I mean, they just kind of like, it's kind of, I mean, that's, where do you think the Germans got it? It was kind of like, oh, okay, Romanesque.
Oh, I was thinking more opposite of like, well, is this of the time period, but they were like kind of making fun of the Nazis? Because they were around at this point.
I will say that when Antipholus does his like heroic speech at the very beginning, he did all these arm gestures that were very, I was like, is he a bad arm waving actor, or if, is that the joke? Is he making a joke about Hitler? Like, let me make fun of this, you know, war, you know, person, and make a bunch of gestures and then be an asshole the rest of the movie. Maybe. I did write that down. I was like, oh,
he and Joe Penner, like, I think they worked well together, but I don't know, because they're in a, they're playing two characters each, where one is an abuser of the other,
right?
But in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see that in a lot of Jerry Lewis movies, you know, going forward with Dean Martin. But Dean Martin was much more of a friend to all the Jerry Lewis characters.
Yeah.
More protective of him. But that was a, you know, that was kind of a, one of the, this is like kind of the earliest example that I've seen of that kind of comedic duo, when one is the handsome, romantic, you know, beautiful singer lead, and the other one is the pratfalling, you know, butt of the joke everywhere, you know, all the time.
I believe I read this somewhere. So the stage version is actually the first time a musical based off of Shakespeare play happened.
How many of them are there?
Well,
Kiss Me Kate,
Kate, Romeo and Juliet is
West Side
throughout.
Story.
Yeah.
Of course.
This is the first.
The first attempt
allegedly,
at that. Okay.
Allegedly. All right. Allegedly, all right. The show is the first musical based on a Shakespeare play, is what is on the Wikipedia page.
Okay. I mean,
so grain of salt, everyone, but I feel like that's like, kind of true.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But like, why would you pick Comedy of Errors?
I mean, why don't you? That's like, Comedy of Errors is the most family friendly of all of Shakespeare's, you know, courtesan aside, it's the most family friendly of all Shakespeare. It's a good inroad besides Romeo and Juliet, you know.
Do Midsummer.
Yeah, that's true. Midsummer is just slightly insane, and they did a lot of Midsummer movies, but I don't know if they did a lot of Comedy of Errors-esque, you know, versions of things.
Well,
by the time this
well,
movie
we've
came along.
Talked about the act, not Comedy of Errors the show, but like Comedy of Errors as the idea,
right,
which happens a lot.
Yeah.
In
mistaken identities, Comedy of Errors. You say Comedy of Errors and people get what you're like, oh, this is a Comedy of Errors situation. Oh, okay. So I have to pretend that this person who looks nothing like my husband is actually my husband, because I can't tell the difference.
Like
know?
Top Hat. We had a whole Comedy of Errors conversation during Top Hat.
Because people don't actually say what they mean and what they want. Yeah. So.
But also, with this movie, I'm surprised it took them so long, especially considering, like, Adriana... Right? Yes. Adriana has like a good head on her shoulders. She should have known. That's not her husband. Even though she hates her husband, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, she should have. Or Luce as the cunning servant character.
He's like, you smell different. What the hell? Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, but it's fine.
But also calling them the same name, I'm like, I hate everyone for this.
I know. I think that was one of those, that's blame Shakespeare, or blame whatever Roman play Shakespeare stole, because he did. Because this is the first Roman play based that was written from Shakespeare that was made into a musical that was made into a movie.
Wow. So many connections.
I know. I think, you know, it was one of those things where they named the kids and then one of them forgot who they actually were named from. Like, Antiphilus one, no, Antiphilus two. You know, I don't know. I don't know how the mother of those kids
I would now,
or the slaves. I'm like, what? How did the
So for any producers listening that want to revive this, cast two sets of twins for each of the characters.
The version that I did at Utah Shakespearean Festival. So we did three shows in a group. We did Little Shop of Horrors, which I was in. We did Comedy of Errors, and we did The Importance of Being Earnest. The Seymour and the what's his name? Algernon were played by two different people. They were a set of twins, and they played Dromios. They played the Dromios. So they looked incredibly alike. You could kind of tell the difference between the two of them, but you could tell that they were definitely, you know, twins. And that was really cool because they did the Comedy of Errors together and then had their own solo, you know, starring moments in the other two plays.
But the Antiphilae
were two different actors. Yeah. Two different.
No, I'm saying
not
now
related. Yeah.
We cast two sets of twins.
Two sets of twins. Yeah. It'd be kind of cool. I will also say that seeing a set of twins do the whole mirror bit, which they did briefly in this movie, the whole mirror bit when they walk, they actually see each other for the first time, and then they kind of, whoops, I'm hitting the mic, in which they kind of do the same movements and try to figure out, am I looking in a mirror or am I seeing, you know, what is going
and
on?
And one of the Dromios like moves and the other one doesn't. You're
does
like,
it,
oh,
like, ah! Yeah. Which I think, you know, even Jerry Lewis did, you know, in the later on.
I'm thinking
a classic
of like Lucy
bit.
And Harpo marks.
I'm sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a classic vaudevillian bit. And anyone worth their salt doing either Comedy of Errors or Boys from Syracuse should definitely put it in. And I was happy to see that they put it into the movie, too.
That's when I realized the trims were different on the Dromios.
Ah, good. Good.
You but I didn't know which one was which.
Yeah, you still didn't know. You're like, oh, whatever.
I was like, yeah. One is more triangular and the other one's more square.
Square.
Huh. Which one's which?
Which one's what? Yeah. But that's the, you know, that's the benefit of having one actor play the same one.
I honestly would love to see the show. Like,
yeah, it's fun
this too. Movie got me interested. I would like to see what would happen on stage. And again, if any producers listening, cast two sets of twins. They'll hate you, but they'll love it because they get work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we get into Shrep and Fliette?
Let's see. I loved the kind of all sing at the end and the duet that that they gave him to sing with himself.
I wrote down
stupid
way to end.
Ending. This absolutely like, oh, let's have a sing off to see which you know
which, who dies.
Who dies or who lives, like the, you know. But that duet of the two of them was beautifully done, and especially the
which one
for the Antiphiluses to sing together.
I loved that.
Yeah, and the all sing that basically it turned into a mega mix at the end. Before
it's a
Joseph,
song along.
It's an all sing mega mix at the end. I loved that. I thought that was great. Also, I will write my quote writing skills came into play, and I had to write this one down. Get yourself a good hangover, and you'll actually enjoy getting your head cut off. So I'm gonna remember that one.
Oh my god,
that is just so like I loved that those kind of, you know, inner jokes.
Those yeah, that like, you're like obviously this movie. Past whatever the code was at this time, I don't remember.
Yeah,
because it came out, but you're like you slipped in a lot of adult humor.
Yeah,
that at but this that's time was very racy.
Right, right. Yep.
All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall
cool.
we?
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats because I only had two, really.
Okay.
One of them is for the lack of music and songs. It felt like it dragged. a lot. And I'm like, you have songs, use them.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was so much more room to expand, like you said,
because
on a theme.
Which one is it? This Can't Be Love. That they play that during the opening credits, and then it's sung at the end. But you're like, we could have had more.
Yeah.
And then my last flat is okay. So when one of the Antipholuses and one of the Dromios, I can't remember which, with the Taylors are in the jail cell, I hated those shots because the way the bars were, it cut them off weirdly. And I'm like, I can't see your face, dude. Like, this is the whole point of acting. The audience wants to see your face.
Yeah.
So for the production designer, I'm going to flat you for those
and
jail
the
bars.
Director of photography.
The director of photography.
Yeah, that's where the...
Assuming cameras. There was one of each.
Yeah, assuming. Yeah.
What did you have any flats for this?
Like I said, I missed the trio of women singing Sing for Your Supper. Because that it's a very you can drive a person crazy kind of moment.
Nice.
And it's just when you don't do it, it's like, I wish they had taken that and made it put it on screen. But that maybe it took time and effort to get, you know, teach Free Will ladies to sing the harmony. So maybe they just went, let's just, yeah.
It doesn't fit.
Yeah. Also, why was there a boy slave in roller skates for a moment?
I'm sorry, what?
There was a boy, a little African-American boy that was like a messenger, and he rolled away from the Duke in roller skates.
I think I missed, I blinked and I missed that.
Yeah.
There was also a moment in, which one was it? The Greeks had no word for it.
Oh, that lyric. Oh.
Yeah, where they talk about African slaves, and I was just like, did the Greeks know about Africa at this point?
Oh yeah, of course. They part of the Grecian or the Roman, you know, empire.
That's Roman.
Included.
That's
included,
not Grecian.
Well, whatever. But
they're very different.
They were right near there. Greece is right near the African coast. But you know, but the African slaves, they call it Heidi Ho. Yeah.
You know what? Fuck it. Well, you want to flat that? We'll flat that one.
I'm flatting that we'll lyric. That. Yes. Yeah. I was like, it was
couldn't be this time period without a little racism.
A
right?
little racism mixed in. Yeah, and everyone being played by white people. So
on the upside, Dromio and Luce were not in blackface. So
they were. Because
they did play slaves,
yep.
And it would have been easier to put them in like some sort of darker makeup
servant girl, is how Luce was described.
Boy,
yeah.
Anyway, sharps.
Sharps.
So I sharped. This is how I worded it, which is what we've talked about already. To using modern ideas but set in Grecian times, like the Mel Brooksian of it.
Yeah,
all
the proto Mel Brooks stuff. I was eating that up too. Yeah.
I also sharped Dromio sliding all over the sets.
Yeah, that was hilarious. It's like, and anytime he entered, he would like slide, and then when he was being taken out by I think the guards.
He was sliding.
Yeah.
There was also like
physical humor. Yeah.
At the Taylors, he would slide around and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also sharped the opulence of the sets.
Beautiful.
They were,
yeah.
It was huge, but I mean, I get it. It was 40s, so like not overly opulent like it could have been with today's technology, budget, money. Everything,
but still impressive.
But still very impressive.
Yeah.
You even said it earlier too. It felt like Busby Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also sharped the police siren coming out of that horn.
Which, what was the movie that it reminded me of? There's a movie called Kentucky Fried Movie from the 70s, I think.
Yes.
And there's a whole sequence that's a Bruce Lee parody, and the alarm goes off and it sounds like eh, 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 And then it cuts to a guy who's just standing there with a bullhorn going, and it is. And I was like, oh my God, this is proto Kentucky Fried Movie. This is exactly that style of jokes, of
it was
absurdism. Yeah.
I know I could have grouped that in the first one, but I was just like, no, this needs its own line because it is so funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then my last stripe is for Martha Ray. She was amazing. Yeah. She was the all-star of
Sharp
this.
Cookie.
You talked about like the misogyny and sexism in this. Mm-hmm. Like there's that moment where Dromio slaps her and then she slaps him back right away.
It's love.
Or wait, no, she slaps him and he slaps her. That's an interesting choice to see, like, both people getting slapped.
Right.
But
her reaction is, oh, he loves me. Which is the opposite of, you know.
Girl, we got to talk about love languages.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
What were your sharps?
I mean, so many of those are the same sharps. The duet of the Antiphilae.
Who are you?
Was it Who Are You or This Can't Be or Falling in Love?
I thought it was Who Are You and then Falling
Who Are You?
In Love.
There you go. Yeah. That was also that,
impressive
split screen because there were moments where their arms overlapped. And I was like,
oh my God,
whoa.
The split screen. I'm sharpening that as well, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That split screen was beautifully done.
With the Dromios that we talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the things, the jokes about being drunk and, you know, were kind of fun too in a, you know, the alcohol is the reason for all issues in this version, not you know, going to a whorehouse as in the original. I also want to sharp all the beautiful horses, all the horses on the taxi, the ice cream cart, the cable car that doesn't connect to anything but has the little ding ding and being pulled, and all the chariots, and you know, I loved
the chariot
all the horses.
Races.
The chariot races. Also the paper boy man.
Oh
with
my God,
stone
that
tablets.
Was hilarious.
Yeah, come on, like you can't. Yeah, and
I feel like I missed out on doing a lot of V's for U's.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I also will also that table at the very end where they're like, there's a law for everything. I'll take it up with the legal department, and it's a table of old white men sitting
the
on this
court.
Basically the Supreme Court, and they all just do this pile on a discussion to you know, to discuss,
which also,
you know,
felt
things, and then sat back down again. That table of lawgivers fanning through the laws to make sure something is correct and be like, oh yep, that's right, or
which
oh,
also
no,
felt,
you know,
Mel Brooksian
very. Yeah, exactly. But that's what I'm saying, like there's so much of this
that, so good,
yeah, that are equal to.
So now, are you happy that this was found and you watched it?
Yeah, because it kind of, getting context for, especially if you love a certain genre like Mel Brooks or Monty Python or whatever, the DNA of that generation was planted comedy-wise much earlier. And to discover things like this, either set from vaudeville, which is definitely what Mel Brooks was raised on, but to actually see it on screen kind of for the first time in such stark contrast to everything else that was being produced at the time, was revelatory, because you have this certain sense of, oh, you know, audiences back at the time weren't sophisticated enough to understand this kind of comedy. No, audiences understand comedy when it's actual comedy. You know,
right.
there is a genre for almost every single audience out there at any time. I also will sharp when the police are sent out, like, like calling all guards. They were making fun of like certain police or detective stories of the time, like all the styles of, you know, the 1930s and 40s were being quoted, and that one policeman with sort of a Roman-esque police outfit on, with a helmet and the little patch where his badge was, I was just like, that is
so
also
funny.
Hilarious.
So smart.
Yeah, it's just, it's so simple, but I don't think I ever saw it as early as that, as early as 1940.
Hmm.
You know, so that was, that was a revelation.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I only wrote down the Who Are You duet out of the Mega Mix. Because it sounded amazing to hear him dub himself. Made me think of Pajama Game, that one song where...
Which one?
Oh, crap. He's making like a memo and then singing, duetting with himself.
Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes. And then he records himself and then sings himself.
And then he it made me think of that, because obviously it's the actor dubbing or
himself and
duetting with himself. So I really appreciated that. The rest of the music, I mean, it felt like it was pared down. Like, we didn't hear enough of the songs.
Yeah, I would sing Sing for Your Supper.
Yeah,
because that is one of the best, like, tight harmony jazz kind of.
Would you
of
sing this things. Version of Sing for Your Supper?
No. I'm going back to the
you're going to the show.
Staged version.
This question is only for the movie. You know this by now.
Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds. Like, it's just such a lovely, jaunty, lovely song. That's fun.
But would you, from this movie, would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
Falling in Love, probably.
Yeah.
They're all good.
He does sound great. It's just that
it's out of context. Out of context.
I also have Bernie in my head, and she does it better, honestly. It's Bernie.
Yeah, because she also has a point of view that makes sense to her.
You've seen the Cinderella that I'm referencing, yes? Yeah.
But they made it work in that context. So
on that note, Sierra.
Yay!
We're done. We did it.
Yay!
We did another John's Picks. Woo!
And what a pick. What a great
revelatory
pick.
It was a goddamn musical. Best Flowers may or may not have been in it.
Who knows?
Who knows? But what do you have to plug or promote?
Nothing as of the recording of this. I'm singing at my stepfather's wedding at the end of August.
Nice. Where can we get tickets?
Where can we get tickets? Exactly. No, I am, you know, auditioning, and I am going to be singing probably with Marquee 5 going out, or definitely with Manhattan Holiday Carolers come December, unless I book something else from audition seasons. Yeah.
Again, if you get a chance to go see Marquee 5, go.
Yeah.
Go.
You came in June. You came to our June show.
Yes.
Yay.
Buy their album that I'm showing Sierra. I still have.
Yay.
Ooh. Their version of Jolene. Life changing.
So fun. So fun. Yeah.
Yeah. If you actually have an answer whether or not Best Flowers was in this, please let me know. Because again, the movie is telling me one thing, but the internet is telling me another. And I kind of want to listen to the movie because it's the it is the source.
Yeah.
But if everyone else is like saying, I mean, if she went by another name, which is also possible, I'm not seeing that credited anywhere, but like, if that is her, if Aileen Brandes, Aileen Brandes, if that is a pseudonym for Best Flowers, someone please let me know. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. If you know of a upcoming production of The Boys from Syracuse, let us know. Maybe,
and I can certainly play loose.
Oh god,
that'd be love.
God, I would cat, you know what, producers, in this production and that you're going to cast two sets of twins, cast Sierra as Luce, no questions asked.
Nice.
And if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, well, we're still doing John's Picks, and we will be talking about Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Ooh.
What a pick. Sierra, thank you so much for... So this isn't like Lucky Stiff where I made a bad... But this is a good one, right? I picked a good one.
This is educational and inspiring. And
the first
exciting.
One was a bad. The first choice was a bad. Yeah.
This one was a wonderful discovery.
Great. So and we'll have you back. for in a new world soon.
Yes.
So keep a lookout for Sierra. And everyone, thank you for listening. And bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.